Peter, chapter 1, verse 13 through chapter 2, verse 3. Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, since it is written, "You shall be holy, for I am holy." And if you call on him as Father, who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, conduct yourselves with fear throughout the time of your exile, knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. He was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but was made manifest in the last times for the sake of you, who through him are believers in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. Having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth, for a sincere brotherly love, love one another earnestly from a pure heart, since you have been born again not of perishable seed, but of imperishable, through the living and abiding word of God. For all flesh is like grass, and all its glory like the flower of grass. The grass withers and the flower falls, but the word of the Lord remains forever. And this word is the good news that was preached to you. So put away all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander. Like newborn infants, long for the pure spiritual milk, that by it you may grow up into salvation, if indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. This is the word of God for the people of God. Praise be to God.
If you don't mind, I'm going to start today by reading from a blog post written by a friend of mine. He's a pastor and a good friend. He's really helped me to understand the gospel as much as anybody I know. And he says this: over a month ago, I was arrested and charged with domestic assault and vandalism against someone I love. I was angry, filled with self-indignation, fear, and vodka. I chose to demand my own agenda, and she challenged that. Among other things, I pushed her, screamed at her, threw her phone. I didn't stop until I was convinced that I'd been heard and that my agenda was validated. The neighbors called the police, and God called my bluff. I decided to make my first post today because I'd come to an end to myself before I had anything to say that was really worth reading. God broke me by letting me break myself. The past, present, and future tense of his breaking is a severe mercy. I was self-indulgent, prideful, and self-absorbed. I was on a bad trajectory. That evening before going out to eat, drink, and be merry, I had an encounter with God that is hard to describe, but I felt as if he was stopping me dead in my tracks as I left my apartment. I truly sensed him present in my room, almost pressing on my chest like a hand holding me back as I walked toward the door. At that moment, I didn't hear a voice or see anything physically, but it was as if I could hear him clearly saying, "Jean Leroux, this is not who you are." It was so vivid and clear, it was so real, that I verbally responded as if I were answering him face to face, "It is for now." I defiantly answered him, and immediately my sense of his presence was gone. Sometimes God gives us exactly what we ask for: autonomy, self-indulgence, even sin, for a time. He allowed this prodigal son to linger in the far country long enough. My visa expired, and God called me home. I was arrested by the police, fired from my job the next day, and lost the woman I loved. What is it about sin, about self-destruction, that makes us so incapable of stopping? So blinded to it. What is it about us that makes us willing to pursue that which we know would kill us. I mean, rationally, no sin makes sense, does it? We know that, and here in the broad daylight, clear of the day, we know that no picture is going to bring joy. We know that that perfect house we fantasize about having would get leaks. We know there's nothing that we're missing. And yet we seek that. We just seek self-destruction. We seem designed for it. This month, I am answering questions that the youth group gave me to answer. And you have the opportunity to not let me off the hook. There's a phone number on the screen. And if you feel like I'm dancing around the topic, you are welcome. Or even if you don't, if you have just questions I don't get to, you are welcome. And I invite you, please, to text those messages, those questions to that number. And I will answer as many as I have time for. In second service, I'll answer them all. So if you want to come back, or you can listen to the podcast that we'll put online tomorrow, and I'll answer the rest. And today's question was, how do I quit sinning? How do I quit sinning? How do I especially stop entangling sins? How do I stop vices? How do I stop my addictions? How do I stop that? That's a pretty type. I thought that was a pretty practical question, one that we could all kind of sink our teeth into on a Sunday morning. And so I want to answer it. And basically the answer is we stop sinning as we remember who we are and seek a community of people who encourage us to be who we are, and separate ourselves from everything that would hinder us from becoming who we are in Jesus. The first thing I want you to see is that we quit sin by remembering who we are, by always reminding ourselves of who we are. Look at this text. Look what he says here. He says, beginning in verse 18, knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited by your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. He was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but was made manifest in the last times for the sake of you, who through him are believers in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, having purified your souls by obedience to the truth for a sincere brotherly love. Love each other earnestly from a pure heart, since you have been born again, not of perishable seed, but of imperishable, through the living and abiding word. You see what he's saying in all those texts, over and over again, he's talking about what's already happened to you. You've already been purified. You've already been ransomed. You're not up under the slavery of sin anymore. Sin doesn't own you. You're not under its power anymore. You've been rescued from it, past tense. You've been born again. You have a new DNA. You have a new spirit. God is delighted in you. He is proud of you. He has already spent for you the most valuable thing that he could ever spend. He's given you his son, the precious blood of Christ, not something worthless and trivial like silver or gold. He has given his own son for you. And it's incredibly important for you to remember this, because whenever we get into sin, and whenever we get into entangling sin, shame is going to come right there behind it, and it's going to begin to tell you that you're worthless. And it's going to tell you that you might as well just give up. Don't even try to do better. You'll fail. And that's a lie. That is an absolute lie. You are in Christ. You are precious. And God is delighted in you. Even while you are sinners, Paul tells us again and again and again, even while you were sinners, because of the great love with which he loved you, he made you alive in Christ. And that's and the reason why that's important is because you're not trying to become something you're not. That would be incredibly hard now, wouldn't it? it'd be hard to try to become something you're not. This week I saw a little video. It's cute. It said, because everything in the world is awful, here's a video of a lion cub learning to roar. There's this little cub, about that big, and he was walking. He could barely walk because his paws were so big, and he was going, and he was just trying so hard. But you know, it is hard. I guess it's hard to learn to roar. But you know what? In about 2 years, that's not going to be cute, is it? In about two, like right now, if you saw that, you'd be really tempted to go pick him up and just cuddle him. But in 2 years, you wouldn't go pick him up and cuddle him. If you can hear now what he's going to sound like in 2 to 3 years, the hair would stand up on the back of your neck. You would be terrified. Because he is becoming what he is. Now, you know what he's not doing? He's not trying to fly. That would be hard. That would be impossible. He's not jumping out of trees hoping that he flies this time. Because he's a lion. When Peter here calls us to be holy, when Jesus tells us to be holy, he's not asking us to fly. He's not asking you to do something you're unequipped to do. He's not asking you to do something that's against your nature. He is asking you to be what you are definitely going to be. He is asking you to grow up into what you were going to be. Now, that's hard. It's hard to grow up. But it is natural. It's natural in the sense that God's made you born again to this. It's what we grow into. A good friend of mine, Tony DePiro, saw what I was going to preach on Facebook. So, hey, Tony, if you're listening. And he just to make sure, he wanted to get his question in early. He said, well, and while you're doing that, why don't you talk about, you know, why Jesus would say that the yoke is easy and the burden is light when it comes to following him. And this is the answer. You see, Jesus has already done the heavy lifting. He's done the hard work of bringing you out of darkness and putting you into the light. He's not done the hard work of bringing you up from the dead. You're not dead in sin anymore. Now, I want you to understand something about that, though. Being alive doesn't always feel like you think it feels. Dead people don't hurt anymore, right? When we watched my mom go to sleep a month ago, there was a sense of relief. She's not going to hurt anymore. If you were still dead in your sin, you know what would not be bothering you? Your sin. People who are dead in their sin aren't sitting around in groups right now wondering, you know, what they can do to possibly get out from the temptation and look at pornography. They're sharing it, or sleeping right now, because, come on, it's raining on a Sunday morning. But they're not beating themselves up over how much they sin. Now, maybe they're wrecking their lives. Maybe they're, you know, alcoholics or addicts, and I'm not saying that every sinner just loves being an alcoholic or an addict. But when it comes to just not loving the Lord, not giving him back what is his, when it comes to just struggling with that selfishness and that self-obsession that so many of us just hate about ourselves, they're not doing that. And there's a reflexive nature in this. You see, dealing with sin is like pulling up weeds. And especially the weeds that have been there for a long time, they are hard to get up, and your hands get bloodied, and your back gets sore from dealing with all those weeds that you have allowed to grow for so long. And you know one absolutely certain way to make sure that your hands don't get bloodied and your back doesn't get sore from pulling weeds? Stop pulling weeds. That's how to make sure that that doesn't happen anymore. If you want to stop hurting, stop feeling the pressure, the pain of fighting with your sin, just stop fighting with sin. That's how you stop hurting. It's kind of like muscle soreness from lifting weights. Right? I went 30 years with absolutely no muscle soreness from lifting weights. I had found the perfect cure. Just don't lift weights. And that's the deal that most humans have made. They don't complain about how hard it is to stop sinning because they're blind to it. They're dead to it, the Apostle Paul says. And when you're raised to life, when you are no longer a slave to sin, that means you're no longer blind to it. You're no longer oblivious to it. And it hurts, and you're fighting against it. But you have to let those sore muscles encourage you, just like when you've exercised and you're trying to get in shape and you wake up the next morning and those sore muscles, they kind of encourage you, like, well, I did something yesterday. I'm alive. I'm a little bit stronger than I was yesterday. I can feel it. When you're struggling against that sin and you feel bad because you're aware that what you said you should not have said, at least that feeling of badness encourages you that you are alive, that you are becoming what you ought to become, that you are growing into the image of Christ. The first thing we do to fight against sin is we remember who we are. We're not trying to earn God's love. We are just growing into the perfect images, the perfect image bearers, the perfect mirrors of His love. And we have to remind ourselves of that every day because it's so hard to remember. It's so hard to remember. We have to come in. That's why we come in here every week. That's my job security. I think about that a lot. Like, good night. Haven't y'all heard everything I got to say by now? And the answer is yes. And if you remembered it, if hearing it one time was good enough, which most of us kind of think it is, right? If I got a problem, Pastor. You got a book or an article I can read about that? Yeah. It won't help a bit, but I'll give you one. You already know it's a problem. The article's just going to tell you to stop doing it. That's not enough, is it? We have to be trained. We have to be reminded. We have to constantly have it hammered into our hard little heads that we are not failures, that we are not forgotten, that we're not abandoned, but that God is alive and He's alive for us, and Jesus has been raised for us, and we are raised in Him. We are raised in Him. That's the first lesson. Youth, remember who you are. Now, like I said, I'm answering questions for the youth, so can I talk to you parents for a minute? Are y'all becoming? Have you developed a maturity to your faith? I know, you know, don't hide behind the, you know, the silly answers. I know the little Sunday school answers. Nobody's perfect. Nee, 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 nee. You know, I remember I taught a Bible study once. And I asked the question, do you have to be holy to go to heaven? And all my little freshmen in the room said, no, nobody's really perfect. Nobody's really righteous. And I had this one senior football player who stood out. And in a very deep voice said, I think the Bible says without holiness no man will see the Lord. Are you becoming? Are you well into the process of becoming a mature person in the faith? Or have you just given up on the weeds? Because it's easy to just give up on the weeds, isn't it? Maybe even cultivate a little patch of weeds. Kind of build a little wall around it. Feed them. I mean, I know greed is a sin and all, but I'm not really greedy. I'm just trying to get, you know, if I could just get into this neighborhood, then everything would be fine. I just need to get my company up to this level, and then everything would be fine, and then I'll go back to, you know, my generosity. I mean, I'm not vain. I know vanity is a sin of being obsessed with what I look like. But I'm not obsessed or vain. If I can just get down to this weight, everything will be fine. It's really about my health. I'm doing it for my husband. That's my favorite joke. I have a reason for that, but I'm not going down that road. What have you made you understand what I'm getting at, right? I think sometimes pulling weeds gets so hard that we're just like, ah, let's just leave that one. I'll keep the rest of my yard looking good. Nobody goes in the backyard anyway. That's not okay. I'm not really worried about it. I don't think the Lord will call your bluff. I was just trying to save you the trouble. I'm trying to save you the trouble. The first way we fight against sin, the way we quit sin, is by remembering who we are. And the second thing we do is we surround ourselves with a community that will remind us of who we are. You surround yourself with a community that reminds us of who we are. I think this is the biggest, well, not the biggest, there's a lot, but one of the many, of all the problems I see in modern Christianity, this is a problem, is that we tend to think of holiness as individualistic. I used to ask people, when you picture someone holy, what do you envision? And, you know, the kind of the mind of, in the mindset of the image of somebody like who lives in the mountains, spends a lot of time praying and fasting and doesn't really see other people very often, reads the Bible a lot. That's just, those are all fine. I mean, that sounds like a vacation. I dig that. That would be great. But I don't think that's, I know for a fact that's not what holiness is described as in the Bible. In the Bible, holiness is communal. You see, look, it's here. Look in verse I want you to see the whole thing. So let's look. We'll begin with verse 22. Having purified your souls. Okay, what's significant about that? It's plural. He's not talking to one person. He's talking to a community. Having purified your souls to the truth for a sincere brotherly love. Love one another earnestly from a pure heart. It's relational. It's communal. Holiness in the Bible is communal. When Jesus was asked, summarize the law, summarize the entirety of the Old Testament law in one sentence, he didn't say pray a lot. He didn't say go be by yourself. He said love your neighbor as you love yourself. This summarizes the law and the prophets. It's communal. And if we want to grow like Christ, if we want to grow up into adults in the faith, then we have to understand that spirituality is not about is all about love and kindness to each other. It's not about harshness to the body. I rewatched a video this week called "Everything You Know About Addiction Is Wrong." It's a fascinating video. He oversimplifies some things and. That's fine. That's what you do in 18 minutes. But it's interesting. He talks about this study that we all heard about, especially if you're my age. You heard about this when you were studying drugs in eighth grade health class. And they were telling you not to do drugs. And they talked about rats. And the rats were given two kinds of water. They were put in cages all by themselves, right? And they were given two kinds of water. And one of the waters was laced with heroin and what one wasn't. And the rats all got addicted to the heroin, and they all overdosed and died. And they said, see, you don't do heroin. And it's like, okay, I won't. But he talked about, he says, you know, they've done further research and further studies, and when they put the heroin water into a cage that's less like a cage and more like a park and filled with things to do and filled with other rats so the rats can be communal, they don't overdose. And as a matter of fact, they kind of ignore the heroin. And it's interesting, and like I said, he oversimplifies in some things, but it is fascinating that what he says is the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. We're designed by God to be communal people. You will not grow in holiness alone, and you will not grow in holiness. You will, by definition, you will grow to be like the people you surround yourself with. You will become more and more like the people you surround yourself with. We know that. We've known that for years. The by far the group that has done way more than anybody else to help addicts and alcoholics is Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what they say to every single person that comes up to them and say, I'm an alcoholic? They say, well, here, read this book, and you'll be fine. No, of course not. They don't. They have a book. They have things they're going to take you through. But they say, you need to come to meetings every day. 30 meetings in 30 days. And you need a sponsor that you talk to every day until you get the hooks out of you. And then you still keep up with that sponsor forever. Because you don't quit sin alone. You will not quit alone. It's the fellowship. It's living in a community of people that really know you. It's confessing those sins that you keep secret. It's living openly and honestly. It's asking for help, and it's encouraging each other. It's telling each other, I've known you for years, and I'm proud of you, and I see how the Lord is at work in you and making you into something beautiful and glorious. And I want to... Again, this is all for the kids, but let me ask you adults. Is there anybody in this church who knows you? If you are living in isolation, you are not growing in holiness. I know, because isolation is the opposite of holiness. And it's hard for us. We're a very isolated people. It's hard. When people ask me what our church does, I hate that question. I tell them we do community groups, and I get the look. I'm used to it by now, right? Community groups, those are for churches that aren't very serious. Like, what do you do in your community groups? You study the Bible? No. We do community. We do community in groups. That's why we call them community groups. That's what we do. Oh. And I'm used to the eye roll by now. I've been getting it for years. And I know what people think is that we're a church that's not serious about holiness. We're not a serious church. We're just a fellowship church. And what I want you to know is I believe with all my heart that the Bible and all of our wisdom as humans teaches us that community and connection is the front line of defense against sin. It's the front line of defense. And if you aren't letting people know you, you're not serious about holiness. I know you want to fight it on your own. You will lose. It's not how the Bible prescribes it in any place. I'm sorry, you're just not practicing kindness alone. You're not practicing brotherly love alone. That's not what you're being called to do. It's hard. I think it's really hard. I haven't been to a community group in years. But it's the front line of defense. It's the front line of defense. So that's the second thing we do. We remember who we are, and we put ourselves in groups with people who are also becoming what we are and who are encouraging us to become what we are. And we're honest and we're open with those people so they know us and they can encourage us. And then finally, we have to lay aside what causes us to stumble. If you are continually, regularly being caused to stumble to a sin in a certain way, whatever that sin is, you have to look and see what the things are that are causing you to stumble, and you have to remove those. Jesus says it like this in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, you've heard it said, do not commit adultery. It's true. But I say to you, any man who looks at his neighbor's wife to lust after her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And you're like, okay, good. I won't do that anymore. And then he adds this nice little appendix. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. For it's better to have one hand and go through life with one hand than it is to have two hands and be cast into hell. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. Which I just hate the word pluck. I think it's so gross. And cast it away from you, because it is easier... It's better to go through life with one eye than it is to have two eyes and to be cast into the fires of hell. What is he saying? He's saying, I know you want to get away from the sin, but you have things in your life, and those things in your life, those aren't necessarily sins, but they're making you sin. They're causing you to stumble. You're stepping over those. Hebrews 13 puts it like this: laying aside all the things that so easily encumber us, weigh us down. The things themselves may not be sins, but they're causing us to hindrances to keep us from pursuing righteousness. I saw a great illustration of this recently. A friend of mine took his son in for his yearly checkup. And my friend's a real big guy, and his son's on his way to becoming a really big guy. And the doctor said, okay, well, he's not in the danger zone yet, but his trajectory is just going to go way over that line of obesity. He's 10, 11 years old. He's like, you're here, but you're not here. You're here. Like, you're heading there. And so my friend's wise, good parent. All right, well, what do we need to do? Do I need to put him on a diet? And the doctor laughed, and he said, that's not how it works. Your family has to go on a diet. Because if the food is in the house, he's going to find it and eat it. And he's going to eat what y'all eat. And you know the hilarious thing? My friend lost 50 pounds. Right? If it's around, you're going to eat it. If it's around, you're going to do it. I mean, if your gym membership is causing you to stumble again and again into vanity and into despising the body that God has given you, you need to give it up. If you're iPhone is becoming again and again a place where you look at pornography and you stumble, and you, I mean, good night, it takes 30 seconds to set the restrictions on an iPhone. And so if you haven't done that yet, you either don't have friends or you're not trying real hard. I'm sorry. I don't take that excuse anymore. But sometimes it is hard. That's not hard. Some things are hard to give up. Some of us, me, need to give up our news channels. Some of us need to give up our friendships. Some of us need to give up, not me this time, but some of you need to give up your boyfriend or your girlfriend. If they're causing you to sin, cut it off. Why does Jesus use so gross examples? He uses gross examples because it's painful. Because it hurts. And as we encourage each other to do these things that hurt, and we replace these friendships, these relationships, with a community that is committed to our holiness, the entire community gets better. That's why I like that picture of my friend losing all that weight with his son. It's a picture of the community committing to holiness and getting better. And as we encourage each other, we ourselves are encouraged. And that's the beautiful thing. I don't want you to forget where we started. Y'all are doing great. And you are beautiful, and you're becoming beautiful. One of these days, you're going to be a powerful lion who knows how to roar. I was hoping you'd laugh on that one. I thought that was just cheesy. I thought that was awful. I would never end a sermon like that. But don't quit trying. You are going to be way more glorious than that. You're going to be way more beautiful than that. God's going to get you there. Really, the only things we control are how fast and how painful. Please pray with me. All right, do we have time for a little few questions? Yeah, we got 12 minutes. All right, first of all, what we got? Within community, do you have advice on what to do when you see someone starting to isolate themselves? It's you go after them the best you can. That's part of, shepherding each other. And the job of the church is to, as a minister, it's my job to be training you on doing ministry. And so you go after each other, but you have to do it in the way that is appropriate for that person. For some, it means, just calling and saying, hey, I miss you. For some, it means maybe inviting them out to lunch or dinner. For some, it may mean an email. You kind of have to just know each other. That's part of community, right? Knowing each other and what that means for us. And sometimes some of us just like to be left alone. And if we say that we're okay, we just need some alone time, that's all right. But don't let us know that we're not forgotten. And with other folks, I may mean you may not, if you don't hear anything, I would encourage you just to keep reaching out until you do. there's a limitation on what we can do for each other. Our job is we can't force anybody to do anything. All you can do is pray for them and encourage them to take responsibility for themselves. That's part of living in community. So, wish I had more advice for that. Next. I struggle with having grace and patience for my difficult coworkers. Well, Caroline's not here, so she's not writing that about me. My sin is pride and self-interest. What does it look like to lay aside what causes us to stumble in that situation? Yeah, that's a great question. I think, I think to some degree, let me just say that, start off by saying this. Your sin might be pride and self-interest, but the fact that you said that probably leads me to think it's probably not. Everybody's sin is pride and self-interest, but at least you're aware of it, which is a lot further along than I am. And what I would say is, look, if loving each other were easy, Jesus wouldn't have bothered to die so that we could have done it. You know, it's just hard. And sometimes you have to be gracious with yourself and go, this is hard, but I'm going to do it. And then as you look at each other, as you see these people that are hard to be with, you want to pray that you'll develop empathy for them. That might mean, I just learned this in the first service. Somebody came up to me and told me about this thought experiment she had learned where you picture this person from birth. You just kind of go through their life and imagine how they've gotten to the place where they are right now. Pray that the Lord will give you grace to be empathetic. And sometimes that grace looks like setting up boundaries, you know. I just don't know. It's hard. Again, it's kind of hard not knowing the specific situations. So sometimes it's just meaning that I need to be more gracious and patient to listen to you. Sometimes the way I'm going to love you is I'm going to teach you that this is a boundary that you need to respect for your own good and for mine, right? So that you don't come to my office when the door is closed or whatever your situation is. There's certain jokes that you don't like to be part of, and you don't want to hear that because it's not healthy. And so, It looks different in different situations. It's hard to answer in the abstract. But it definitely doesn't involve, what it does not involve is secluding yourself off and silently hating that person. Okay, that's not it. It does involve kind of thinking through what does it look like to live with this person in kindness and grace, what needs to be addressed, how can I show that I'm interested and I care about them, but I don't want to be talking to them all day or whatever the issue is. So, there you go. Next. That was hard. Is it a sin to be angry with God? No. What would your advice be on stopping that anger? Do you think anger with God means you need to cut out an idol? I say no because so much of the Psalms are angry with God. I think really this is the thing about emotions. They just are. Okay. So if you spend all your time trying to not have an emotion, that's wasted time, and that gets you kind of caught up in a loop you can't get out of. What you need to do with that anger is you need to explore it and express it to God and talk to Him about it. And that conversation goes in many different ways. And sometimes I've been very angry with God over the last, really, 18 months. I've been struggling with that over different things, and especially over the last 8 months. And, Psalm 73 has been a great comfort to me because he talks about being angry with God and how just mad he was. And then he says, I was a brute beast before you, but you were right there with me. You were very near to me. I can't remember the exact words, but he says you held me basically by my leash. And that's a beautiful picture to me, that even when I'm just furious like a mule just fighting against the leash, he's just graciously holding it, just going, you're not going anywhere. I'm going to be here tomorrow. You're going to be here tomorrow. Probably be easier for you if we work this out, but that's up to you. And that was a very helpful thing for me, just to express that. And sometimes, like I've said before, sometimes you have to go through it and let God talk to you and talk back to Him. And, one particular time, I think that's what the cross is for. I haven't heard a lot of people explain this, so it makes me nervous when I'm the only one I've heard explain something. But sometimes I think it's valuable just to go, you know, God, if you were here, what would I do? I think I would yell at you. I'd like to spit on you. I'd like to hit you. Well, he's done all that, right? That's the graciousness of God, that he allowed himself to undergo all that. He's been spit on. He's been beaten. He's been killed. And I really do think if you can go through that anger and get to a place that says, okay, Ricky, I know you want to do all these things to me. I've already done that. Okay? I'm not even going to argue with you about whether you can or not. It's already happened. Now can we work with it? And that's, I think that's a much healthier road. I think that's a gospel road rather than just trying to avoid it. It probably means you have an idol to cut out. It probably means there's a sin somewhere that you. It may mean you just have something you need to grieve. You know, instead of constantly being mad that you didn't have the mom you always wanted, maybe you just need to grieve that and mourn it. And it could mean a lot of things. So I don't know. It's not necessarily an idol. Idolatry back in the 90s kind of became the easy sin to call out. So, one more. Can you speak to the power of incremental change versus the unrealistic expectations of everything, of wanting to fix everything now? Yes, you grow incrementally, not all of a sudden you don't get everything you want to fix right now. I think you said it really well. You do grow slowly, and that's one of the reasons why we need people around us. You know, I've got a few friends. Actually, I didn't get to this question last week, but I did in the podcast. You need people in your life who, when they look at you and say, I'm proud of you, you're doing well, you're growing, that you believe them. You need people that you believe when they say that. And that's what, because you are always seeing the new weeds, right? You're always fighting against sin every day. You'll never not be fighting against it. That's why you need other people around you to say, you know what? You're just doing a lot better. One of my good friends told me a couple years ago, he said, you know, you apologize better and more quickly than you used to. That's as good as it gets for me, you know? I'm better and I'm faster to apologize. So, That's why you need that. You can't see yourself grow necessarily. It's easier to see what you still have yet to do. And that's how the Lord does things. You know, he didn't grow his church up to 1 billion people in one day. He took 2,000 years to do it. He just does things slowly. And that's how he's working in you as well. All right, let's do one more. I struggle with the same sins for most of my life, and finally have come through them in the last year. Good. I really am glad for you. When my problems have been so obvious for so long, where do I start looking next? Oh, they'll come. I'm serious. Just live your life, man. You live your life in community, you'll see what's going to come next. That's like sometimes I get people asking me, well, not sometimes, occasionally I have somebody ask, how do you fight against pride? Like, the Lord does that for me. He keeps me humble. The Lord will show you where you need to work next. If you go for, I would say, if you go for like a year and you don't see a single sin you need to work on, you come talk to me and I'll point some out to you. But, you know, seriously, I trust the Holy Spirit on that. I'm thankful. What you're experiencing right now is this. You have hopefully broken through a barrier that I hope you continue to have broken through for the rest of your life. Remain humble, or you'll find yourself doing it again. The Lord's given you a little rest. Okay, he's going to take you around the corner of the house here in a few minutes and show you a whole new flower bed full of weeds you didn't even know existed. Trust me, that flower bed's there. You're going to find it. But right now, why don't you just take a step back, you know, like you do on a Saturday afternoon and go, this flower bed looks good. Let's be thankful for that. That's a good thing for you to do right now.